Want to open the Bengals Beat podcast reminding everyone we're fueled by 50 West Brewing Company. Now's the time to head out to the production works.
It's where we held our live BBP after the draft.
They have sand volleyball leagues, canoeing, kayaking, cycling, running groups, all based out of 50 West on Wooster Pike. Plus, Saturday, July 7th, you have to come out to the third annual 50 West Punch-Out. It's where local brewers box against other local brewers with quality local craft beer and food as far as the eye can see. Plus, it marks the official can release of Punch You in the IPA, and I will be emceeing the event, drinking coast to coast, and doing my best Michael Buffer impression.
Hope to see you soon down at 50 West, where every beer is a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewery. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals Beat writers, Jim Osarski and Paul Diener Jr. invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out insider news, listen in on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. You can subscribe in iTunes, Google Play, or your preferred podcast platform. Of course, you can always listen in the podcast section of our Cincinnati.com Bengals app. Let's go. All right, welcome into the latest edition of the BBP. It's the Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewing Company. OTA's edition, closer to real football.
Closer.
The stuff that you were going to claim to be real football a couple weeks ago was not.
This was
at
more
all.
Real football.
We saw more real football today. Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Mazarski here, your Bengals beat writers from Cincinnati.com and the Cincinnati Inquirer. Fresh off the first day of the Bengals OTA session, 10 OTA practices that they'll have, followed by their three-day mandatory mini camp. None of these are mandatory. These are voluntary.
Yes.
Organized team activities.
Yep.
And that is part of the storyline that we will get into today, because one prominent contract year man was not in attendance.
No.
Here for the Bengals, as he has not been in attendance for anything here this entire offseason.
No, that'd be Carlos Dunlap.
Yep.
And I guess I was a little surprised. I mean, it's one thing to miss sort of all the voluntary workouts, you know, which is really just weightlifting sessions, and, you know, you get to meet the coaches, and briefly, though, like, they don't get to spend a whole lot of time together. And even, look, even for a new defensive coordinator, I mean, really, the playbook isn't really that deep for a defensive end.
Run, get quarterback.
Yeah, so that was whatever. But, I think there was some expectation from Marvin Lewis and the coaches that he would be here.
Yeah. The next milestone on all of this, and we've got a lot to get to today. We're going to talk a lot about things. Kind of the first day of OTAs is really it's the newsiest of any of the practice sessions of the offseason, because it's the first time we see the whole team on the field doing things. There's guys that are not doing things. You see coaches working in certain places for the first time. It's the first time they put a starting lineup, quote, out there. You see a lot of things for the first time. After that, it becomes kind of blah in a lot of ways. So we'll run through some of the news, talk about Carlos. We're going to talk about some other observations, talk about everyone's favorite man, John Ross.
Yeah.
We'll talk about some things that we liked, and a lot of discussion about the offensive line. You'll hear from offensive line coach Frank Pollock, who I just had a interview with. So we'll have all of that. We're going to power rank. Shout out Andrew Whitworth for the suggestion on Twitter. He suggested that we power rank the top players over 35. Since everyone's doing their top players under 25.
Yeah.
He wants top players over 35, so we're going to power rank top players over 35. We'll tell you what we're mad or happy about with. All right, back to Carlos Dunlap. The next benchmark on this will be mandatory minicamp.
Yes.
For the first word in that phrase being why. It will be mandatory, so he's already forfeited some money.
Yeah, like $300,000.
By his choice.
Yeah. That's not a small chunk of change. I mean, 300K.
I would like 300K.
I know. I wish they could funnel it to us.
They should. They should be able to bequeath. It should be like a will. Like I choose that Jim is showing up on my behalf, so he shall collect my bonus.
Well, I would say that would almost always guarantee that Gino shows up for stuff if it said like the media is going to get your money.
No,
if you absolutely don't. I mean, Gino likes his money enough that he will be here. He is here and has been. But yeah, 300K. You know, that's no small thing. Even if you're making $7 million.
And about to make more.
Yeah.
So it is, I mean, look, is this contract motivated? We can only speculate.
Right.
His camp is not discussing it.
No.
The Bengals are not talking about it. Marvin Lewis said, this is not a story. It's not a big deal. That's what he said.
Yes. In the story at Cincinnati.com.
In the story that is very much a story.
Right.
And, you know, I think the headline could even have been, this is not a story.
Yeah.
But it is. Because it is a contract year for Carlos Dunlap. He is very much at the center of this discussion that we've been having all offseason here on this podcast and in this building. Do you pay both of these guys to play into their 30s? And Carlos is at the center of this extension issue.
Right.
So, you know, to not show up is taking a stance. He's not the only guy to do something like this across the league, right? I mean, there's guys everywhere that are not showing up.
Yeah, I think, aside from Tom Brady, who no one really knows what his issue is other than sticking at the hoodie, almost everyone else is missing because of financial reasons.
Yeah.
Aaron Donald missed OTAs and training camp last year. Le'Veon Bell, the same thing. I don't know what's going on in Jacksonville. Those guys, AJ Bouye and Jalen Ramsey, didn't show up, but
you never know there. Julio Jones.
Jones basically came out and said his was contract related. So, I mean, it's the only leverage players have is to withhold their services. The interesting thing to me, Paul, is he's doing this to a Mike Brown run organization. And while it may irritate Marvin at some point, it's not really going to change Mike's mind. it hasn't. Like, him not being at the voluntaries or not coming to OTAs isn't going to change, for good or bad, the Bengals front office rushing to the table or changing how they view Carl. Like, that, for them, it doesn't really matter.
The only thing that would change Mike's mind if Carlos did start speaking up about it and saying, trying to pressure the Bengals into whatever. I think they're not going to care if he does or doesn't show up at any of this stuff. If he started speaking up to making demands of his contract, that because they don't like when this stuff goes public.
Right. I think even if he missed the mandatory, if he just like put his foot down and said, all right, these are all voluntary and no one can make me do anything and no one can say anything bad about me because of it, and he skips those 3 days in mid-June, and now you don't see him till camp, then it's a real question. Well, is Carlos going to show up for camp?
Right.
I don't know. And maybe that'll be, but even then, I don't.
The weird part, and this is like such a social media era thing, is for this to go on while Carlos has the most Instagram stories of anyone in the NFL. You always know where
he
is.
So many little dots.
We were so prepared for this. Like, we had the story already written because we're like, look, we've been following him in Miami for weeks. He was in Las Vegas last night. We just posted from Las Vegas. Unless he's taking the red eye back here, he ain't going to be here in the morning.
Right.
No one posts more than Carlos Dunlap. We all know everything he's doing. So there's no secrets here. There's no hidden agenda. When he's working out, you see him working out.
Right.
When he's at his friend's, look like a baby shower,
yeah.
You know what he's writing on the onesie.
Right.
Like, we know what Carlos is doing. And, does any of it matter? No.
No.
To what Carlos Dunlap is going to be for the 2018 Bengals, unless he doesn't show up for training camp.
Right.
I don't even care about mandatory mini camp.
Right.
I barely care about training camp.
Yeah.
Unless he doesn't show up for training camp, there should be no reason to have any concern, in my opinion, over what Carlos Dunlap is going to be for this team or even what he could be contractually into the future.
Yeah, because put it this way, he might be willing to forfeit $300,000 and maybe he's willing to eat a whatever the fine can be for a mandatory mini camp, but he's not taking those huge fines for, because those get to be big fines. Now, granted, you look at Los Angeles a year ago chose not to fine Aaron Donald.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a two-way street. You know what I mean? Like, if you're willing to miss it, you can't expect the team to not fine you or to pay you back or to not, you know. So that, I don't really know if you want to mess with that.
I can tell you what would happen here.
Yeah,
ain't nobody like collecting that check.
If you choose, if you choose to not show up here, I don't think they're just gonna wave that away and say,
"Oh, it's okay."
Yeah,
no, that's not how it operates. Those things are contractually binding. So that's where that situation stands with Carlos. We'll obviously keep you up to date on it. We'll keep reaching out trying to get comment from Carlos and his camp. I would not expect to hear back from them, and there's a good chance the first time we hear from Carlos will be on the first day of mandatory minicamp or the first day of training camp.
Yeah.
We shall see. Well, unless you follow him on Instagram, in which case you'll hear plenty from him. He probably could do like an Instagram Live right now addressing all of the stories that are
out
there.
He should call us.
He should call us.
Yeah. Don't do that, Carlos. Don't go on Instagram Live.
Don't do that.
Call us. Come on the BBP.
Yeah, that's what we should do. I'm all for it. I feel like Carlos would do it.
He's definitely listening to this right now.
Well, not right now. I mean, that's how podcasts work. We record, and then I have to produce it and post it. So right now, as the listeners are listening, he's listening.
Yeah.
But not right now as we're talking.
I think you broke like a wall.
Is that too much for people?
Is that like the fifth wall?
No, I don't know how many walls there are now. Is it a ceiling?
There's
or is
four
the ceiling
walls.
The roofs?
Like if you talk, I think we break the four.
It bounced off two of them.
Yeah.
Don't stop listening, people. We're going to get to the good stuff, okay? I'm sorry. All right. Let's talk about other OTA observations. We'll move on from Carlos. And we'll get to the offensive line later. So non-offensive line, non-Carlos Dunlap. What did you, anything that kind of struck you from the first time seeing the club together today?
AJ Green's still good.
They still throw the ball to him a lot.
They throw it to him a lot. He still runs past everybody. Although we didn't really get to see him stretch it against William Jackson the third.
Yeah.
So he ran past Dre and some other dudes.
Breaking news: Sojourn Shelly.
Yeah.
Not quite ready for the AJ Green.
I don't mean to call out Dre, but I mean Dre likes to go against AJ. He makes it a point.
He does.
And on the one, it was a deep ball. William looked – you know what the corners, as they always say, Paul, right? Defense is ahead of offense, if you will. Dre and individuals, Darquez and individuals, that they're not allowed to press and touch, all that stuff. But William Jackson III especially looked really good.
Yeah.
He's
prime.
Josh Shaw not so much in the slot.
Alex Erickson toasted him up the slot for a deep ball.
And then, so the corners, I thought, and individuals, I think Kavari Russell made up for a kind of a lapse in coverage to a breakup that led to a kind of tip ball pick. Darius Phillips with another pick.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess offensively, John Ross, unlike a year ago this time, he's out there and doing things.
Yeah, so, you know, I wanted to double up and put it the emphasized stamp on your Darius Phillips.
Yeah.
Quickly making plays and making impressions. Making picks will get Terrell Austin's eyes.
Yes.
He's here to get turnovers, and Phillips has every chance he's gotten so far, we've seen him come away with the ball in his hands.
Yeah.
Fifth-round pick, and when he has the ball in his hands, is electric. Also, obviously, taking punts with the punt returners back there. So a good first impression happening from the fifth-rounder. Darius Phillips, we'll see. He may amount to nothing. He may not make that a camp, but for first impressions, it's been good. John Ross featured a lot. I mean, he saw a lot of passes. He was out there full everything. There is no injury element currently to John Ross yet.
Yeah.
So everything was, you know, I thought he looked pretty good. I mean, he was getting the ball. He was making some nice catches. He was using his speed and trying to run. He had some screw-ups.
Yeah.
Where, you know, he ended up with a coach in his ear and guys, like, talking to him and then having to pat him on the helmet.
Right.
But he had some nice plays, too. He's out there. I like that they're throwing it to him a lot.
Yeah.
I like that he's involved. We never got to see this last year. I mean,
no. That's the main thing is just the fact that, I mean, even, you know, Marvin doesn't always say a whole lot about anything ever, but it wasn't just coach speak with him, on Tuesday talking to us after practice, Paul, of saying, John Ross didn't do any of this. And you're kind of like, oh, yeah. He didn't do a thing until just before that third preseason game.
Yeah. And as far as camp practices go, I mean, he was limited in those, essentially.
Yeah. So just the fact that he's healthy and running and able to take whatever light contact happens, you know, when guys break on a ball and he's got to adjust. So you would think he's already sort of, I mean, no, he is. He's already ahead of where he was a year ago, which is important for this offense.
I'd settle for fully cleared.
Yeah.
You could just start right there, and I'd say that's a win.
Yeah.
He's fully cleared. He's doing literally everything. That's good for me because there's a lot of guys that aren't. Sean Williams. I don't know what's going on there. Catch anything on that? I didn't.
No, it was basically Marvin. All Marvin said was anyone who was like a blanket. If he was a limited participant, they're on schedule.
Okay, everyone's on schedule.
So from Tyler Eifert to Billy Price to Sean Williams was not on the rehab field but didn't participate. Tyler Croft was on the rehab field. Auden Tate on the rehab field.
Yeah.
Jake Fisher.
Did not fully participate.
So, I think Marvin just sort of sweeping, everyone's fine. Everyone's good.
This is fine.
Yeah.
This is fine. Nothing to see here.
I think they have been working out, so who knows what's up with muscle pulls and things. So I don't know if it's the same group of guys a week from this podcast, might need to dig a little more into who's doing what or why they're not doing it.
Yeah. That's why I think for Ross right now, fully cleared, doing all the things, making some plays, trying to not get hurt. I think that's a positive.
Right.
It's a positive right now. I want to talk about the offensive line. I'm just going to start with conversation with Frank Pollock to kind of get some of the answers out there before we dive further in. Myself and Dan Horde were the only two tracking Frank. I was honestly surprised by that a little bit after practice today. I thought, but everyone was kind of on Marv watch.
Yeah.
Wanted to talk about Carlos, which he didn't want to talk about.
No.
Uninterested in that topic.
Yeah.
There's
not much he could say with a voluntary.
Yeah. So anyway, everyone was chasing Marv. So for the majority of the time, it was just Dan and I. Then a few others popped in. But I want to bring you some of the conversation with Frank Pollock because, we had lots of different faces doing new things, everybody trying to figure out this new scheme of offense, particularly this new scheme of offensive line play. So this is a little bit of him talking about where that's at.
I'm curious, this time of year, what can you try to do to simulate as close as you can do to what full contact will be, and what are you looking for?
Well, everything, hat speed and learn how to play with your hands and feet. So.
Yeah.
At this level, you got to play with your hands and feet. You got to stay on your feet. So if you're leaning forward, you're burying your head, you're leaning with your shoulders, you're going to be on the ground. And that's not good technique when you have the pads on. So everything's the same. I mean, there's some drills you got to do limited-wise that you're not allowed to do. So you learn how to work around within the rules, but you're still looking to play fast and make calls, make the adjustments, make them think, process fast, motion shifts. It's just great work going against the defense. You get better looks, not giving self-service. You can't simulate that. So. Yeah.
So it's closer to what you want to see. Do you feel like you then can make judgments on players this time of year? Is that kind of hard?
You don't want to be too rash to make judgments because you don't have the big boy pads on. We're still in our underwear. When you put the pads on, all of a sudden you see a bunch of guys go over here, and you see a bunch of other guys go over here. Hopefully we got more guys going over there, right? So that's the challenge. I mean, you want guys who can move and think and play fast and you know, process quickly, but at the end of the day, too, it's a violent physical game. You got to put the pads on and kick the guy across from his ass.
Yeah.
And you can't know that until you put the pads on.
Yeah.
That's, so football's still football.
Yeah.
So you can gain a lot, but temper it down a little bit.
Do these guys start basically with a clean slate with you since you had
coached for me.
Before?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I told them day one. Everyone here's got a clean slate. What you've done in the past is really relevant to me. And that's really the way the whole league works. It's a what have you done for me lately league. You know, you can go from the penthouse to the outhouse real quick, right? So hopefully you can go from the outhouse to the penthouse just as fast, but it takes a lot of work. So that's the nature of the beast. Just when you think you've got this league and this game figured out, it humbles you real quick. So you got to be always working and striving to get better, and you know. So everyone in my room's got a clean slate, and hopefully they add to the good and not show me anything that's bad in that regard.
It's interesting to see Hopkins at center some of the time and Johnson at guard some of the time. Are you just
Absolutely. You
know trying to get as many versatile guys as you can?
Yeah, everyone learns when they come in this league. You only draft 7 guys usually on game day, so you got to play multiple spots. 2 guys to back up, 5 positions. So sometimes your backup center might be one of them starting guards, you know, so you got to play more than one spot and you got to cross train. I've heard horror stories of guys losing 4 or 5 centers, you know, and they're down to that 6th center. I mean, it's tough sledding, so you can never have enough. So you're always constantly training and moving guys around. So tomorrow, I said they'll all be ready to flip sides. If you're a right side player, tomorrow you're going to be on the left.
Is that going to be something you'll do kind of throughout OTAs? Is one day, you know, guys don't necessarily know until they almost...
Yeah, well, they know in the morning.
Yeah,
they go over their depth. And I already told them you know, yesterday or today about tomorrow, the flip-flop, so they're not shocked by it. So unless you're an established starter in this league, you're going to just stay in that one spot. Everyone else will be ready to flip.
Yeah.
So. What did you see in Bobby Hart that made him an interesting candidate?
He's athletic and he's long, and he's got play experience. So he's continued to show that. He's just learning to do things how we do it and continue to become a Bengal and move forward and get better. So.
Are you pleased with the tempo? I mean, everybody talks about tempo of practice. The whole line has a tempo too.
Right.
Are you happy with that?
No, because it was day one. We're never satisfied and happy. We've got a long ways to go. And like I told them, everyone in the group's got rust you got to get rid of, starting with me. I'm rusty from coaching. Now we're actually working against the defense and getting to get challenged from a coaching standpoint. I got to get the rust off from last season. The players got to get the rust off. So we all got to get that together. So never satisfied. So got day one, man, a lot of rust out there.
Gotcha.
Get that rusty ease.
Energy was good, though, huh?
Yeah, energy was good. Guys practice hard. That's line one. If you can't do that, we don't have a chance.
Right. How good can Glenn be?
As good as he wants to be, you know. He got cleared with his ankle and foot issues, so we're just easing him back in as he gets more in playing shape. And then, I mean, he's a good player. When he's healthy, he's proven that in the league. So we're excited to have him and get better with him out here as well.
How important is what Billy Price is doing right now? Even if it's just small, doing some calls and things like that.
He can't get enough mental reps, so he's getting every walkthrough rep. We're not going against the defense. Everyone, this is all reps he's allowed to get, and he's getting every mental rep back there with me, going through the calls, and then obviously all the film set he's doing, extra meetings and whatnot. So he can't get enough of it. I mean, it'd be better to be out there actually taking each physical rep, but he can't do that right now, so he's maximizing his opportunities.
All right, so that was Frank Pollock kind of talking about a little bit of state of the offensive line. He's got rust. They got rust. We all got rust. You know, everybody's trying. But you got to love it. It's that guy in front of you, kick his ass.
Yeah.
That is Frank Pollock's attitude.
Yeah.
Is like, go, you know, that's what it's all about. Go downhill, run fast, be instinctual, and just – knock people back, be physical. And, you know, every guy on the line that I talk to, no one is trying to – usually in these situations with new coaches or new anythings, there's lots of, well, you know, sugarcoating and, kind of hemming and hawing a little bit about it's, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Like it's no big deal. No one is saying that. in the offensive line room. It is new. It is everything is very different. And, you know, obviously the optimistic thought is that it fits this group better. And that's why he's here. But, you know, it's everybody is going to get a chance. One of the most interesting things that I think that he said is he's going to be doing more cross training of guys than Paul Alexander did, you know, where literally tomorrow morning guys are going to show up and everybody that was on the left side is going to be on the right side and everybody on the right side is going to be on the left side. Guards are going to be centers and centers are going to be guards and guards are going to be tackles and tackles are going to play inside. And unless you're Cordy Glenn or Clint Bowling or Billy Price, probably, who played 3 years of guard at Ohio State.
Right.
You're going to have to play left, right, guard, center. You need to be able to, and you're going to do it all in practices as we go through.
Interesting.
And so, you know, I remember talking to Paul Alexander. Is Christian Westerman, you know, he's a guard.
Yeah.
He's not going to play center. He's, you know,
it's not a referendum on Russ.
It's not a
witch hunt. Referendums and witch hunts.
So it was like, you know, that to me is one of the more interesting things. Cedric Obuehi is going to kick in and start playing guard soon as well because, like he said, you got seven guys up on game day. I got five positions to fill up with backup. So if you're going to be a non-starter, if you're Cedric Obuehi, you need to be able to play guard.
Yeah.
So they're going to try to move him in there.
Yeah, I mean,
at some point.
Right. And last year's, I mean, you'd think the injuries got to be ridiculous. I mean, when you lost both starting tackles in Minnesota. But, you know, Jake Fisher went down and
all these guys had
Trey Hopkins went down. Yeah, TJ Johnson went down. I mean, Bowling's been pretty solid since coming back off the ACL however many years ago. But,
correct.
You know, Billy Price is starting slower.
Yeah, Billy Price coming
off. So, yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I think that'll end come training camp, I would think. I mean, you can't really – I mean, all these new dudes.
Well, I talked to Christian Westerman a little bit, and he was like, well, yeah, I mean, I've been cross-training, playing different positions – but I've not been doing like it just happened in a preseason game.
Right.
Like, I showed up. Right. I show up at the preseason and they're like, switch it up. You're playing left. And he's like, I've literally been playing right all camp in preseason.
Right.
Like, not done it at all. But it was when game day showed up, you were just surprised with the switch it up. And this seems to be a trying to get ahead of that game and have everybody have a better feel of how all the positions work. You know. And not be so confused. You know, no one's saying you have to master them all, but master your one and know the other ones, like you said. So, you know, I find that a little bit interesting. I don't expect Clint Bowling's face when I told him. He said everyone was going to switch sides. Like, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. I'm going to assume that I'm not part of that. If Clint's healthy, he's playing left guard.
Right.
Unless he somehow kicks out the left tackle in an emergency situation.
Yeah.
Why did he start a tackle, Jim?
No. Clint Bowling's not the right tackle. He's not the center.
The other interesting thing, you know, we talk about this is a clean slate for this whole line.
Yeah.
The right side is open. I mean, two guys that it don't even matter who was starting. We're technically not allowed to say because we don't have eyeballs that could see. We're not allowed to say what we saw, even though we saw it with our eyes.
We did.
But we're not allowed to say we saw it.
No.
Even though we did. No, we can say we saw it. We just can't say what we saw.
Right.
Even though we saw it.
Men were over there.
Now, we can say Jake Fisher was not a full participant, so he was not over there. So you could probably imagine who was at right tackle starting. And at right guard, there was another guy. But here's the thing though, and I was talking with Trey Hopkins about that, and Trey said it was made explicitly clear by Frank Pollock, do not give any semblance of thought to who's out. That's who's out there today. Do not cut yourself. Do not think you're the starter. Do not think anything by who's out there today. We just have to line somebody up, so we're lining some people up for right now.
I think if he really wanted to send that message, he should have ran all five tight ends out there to start the O-line. Just a drive home the point. Like, it doesn't really matter.
See? It doesn't matter. Tyler Eifert is not going to be our starting center necessarily.
That would have been a heck of a start to practice.
That would have been a story and a big deal, I would say. So anyway, I don't know. Are you still lacking confidence in the offensive line?
Yeah. I mean, it can't be worse. It can't be. It just can't be.
I mean, it can. It shouldn't.
81 sacks. And I know it's not all on the O-line, but whatever. What? It gets hung on them.
Yeah.
81 sacks in 2 years. What is that, over 100 quarterback hits? I mean, it's been awful. And that includes Whitworth and Zeitler and, you know, the Golden Boys who left. I mean, they were part of that, too, in 16.
They did give up 40-plus sacks.
So, you know, it's been bad. So, I don't know. It can't be worse, Paul, to me, but I don't know. I mean, until I see them in pads, it's really hard for me to be super excited about it. You know, there were already some major – there was a major injury in Philadelphia – at the recording of this podcast, the linebacker going down. I think that's the thing, Paul, is like they want all these guys to make it through to July on their feet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You don't want to lose Cordy Glenn. You want that foot to be re-aggravated. I mean, you know what I mean, right? And you don't want mm-hmm. Billy Price to be push himself too hard in the limited work he does and re-aggravate something. So I think, I don't know, I guess for me that's all I'm – you know, at with them,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And with Billy Price as an update for what is actually going on with him, he's out there taking every snap that is a non-contact snap.
Right.
So if it's nobody directly in front of him, sometimes there is somebody directly in front of him, but they're
not allowed to touch him. Yeah, they're not touching him, yes.
Not touching him, yeah. So he goes out, makes the calls, and does all the things, and makes the movements. But once that changes to a contact, ish drill,
right?
He steps out. So, and of course, he's getting his mental reps. That's a great
mental reps.
It's a great off season phrase. Everybody loves mental reps. Got to get your mental reps.
Yeah.
So that's where our offensive line is. I guess we don't need to go too much deeper than that.
No, because again, there's not much to see.
There is not much to see. Hey, shout out to guy who filled the bridge today.
Yeah, there were. Yeah.
Guy.
He was loud.
He was
there
excited.
Might have been, I thought there were two guys, but it could have just been the one guy.
He might have been the same guy who came back.
Maybe.
Like he came and he yelled something, and then he came back.
Was that like, was strong, though.
He kept yelling.
That's what
you need when you fill the bridge.
Yeah.
You need to be feisty. Small but feisty.
Right.
And so we appreciate that. Always good to see people filling the bridge and yelling weird shit at the players.
Yes.
It's at least entertaining for us. I want to bring up your story on Bill Lazor from this past weekend. If you have not read it, it is on Cincinnati.com, of course, on our Bengals app. And you sort of, because this was the official unveiling, if you will, of Bill Lazor's offense for the first time they're on the field and he's coaching them doing it on the field. And everybody wants to know, what's it going to look like?
Right.
How's it going to change? And, you know, it's a whole new thing. It's it's a blow-up type situation.
Yeah.
It's all, you know, there's not a whole lot of holdover. But to try to predict that is hard. But, you know, you went deep. You went deep into his past to try to get kind of a feel for what it could be like, or at least what, you know, his influences would suggest.
Yeah, it's and we kind of touched on this when he was promoted a year ago, and maybe when he was hired 2 years ago, just sort of this varied background. But I think it really comes more into play now as a play caller. You know, a guy who, broke into the league with Dan Reeves, and for younger listeners, Dan Reeves went to 3 Super Bowls with Denver, 1 Super Bowls as a player with the Cowboys. Old school, yes. And what did that mean? Run physical up front, play action, throw it deep. Moves to Joe Gibbs. How did Joe Gibbs win 3 Super Bowls? Pound it.
Riggins.
Right? I mean, and again, some play action. And then he moves to with Mike Holmgren, just, you know, and Bill talked about, you know, Holmgren would actually bring out the Bill Walsh playbook, which really was kind of like the Paul Brown playbook, in terms of teaching a quarterback, and then he moves, and then there's the Chip Kelly thing. So no one, but I talked to six or seven people that worked with him or he worked for, and no one could guess what he is going to do here. Because basically they said, you can take all that and you might see all of that, or pieces of it, or but it's going to be tailored to Joe Mixon, or it's going to be tailored to Andy Dalton. And it may look like a thing once. It was really interesting, Paul. Like, it, especially nowadays, like, you just, you know, it's easy. You go around the league and you can kind of take an offense and say, you're this, you're this, you're that, right?
Right.
And he's just not in that boat. And, you know, now obviously time will tell if that's will work. But it's, I mean, that's what you'd want to hear, right? You'd want to hear these guys being given things they can do.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, in the video that goes along with the story with Andy talking about this, I thought was interesting because he was pointing out this is how he's being challenged.
Yeah.
Because the offense Andy Dalton has used has been essentially the same skeleton since he came in the league with Jay Gruden. You know, Hugh Jackson and Ken Zampezi changed things to make it their own, but they didn't change the bones of the offense.
Right.
They didn't change the way things were being called and done and all that stuff. This is the first time he has a new offense.
Right.
And he has to learn all of this stuff, and that's part of the challenge for Andy Dalton this year and for a lot of these players that have been there forever. Everyone, I heard that from a couple guys say, everyone is learning together.
Yeah.
Because nobody, whether you are just got here or you've been here since 2011,
right?
It's everyone's had basically the same, almost the same amount of time to learn this.
Yeah,
it's an all new thing, and I'm curious to see what happens. You know, you can never say this for sure, but more than likely, Bill will never get a better shot than this.
Yeah,
I mean, anybody that is wants to be an offensive coordinator. You want a shot, you can create your own. You're not dealing with some quarterback rebuild situation.
Right.
You've got some stars, and players that you're familiar with. You're not coming in fresh where you don't know anybody, you don't know what guys can do. And, you know, he's had a job before.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had the situation happen with Joe Philbin getting fired, and him getting fired in Miami. If he wants to be taking the next level, I mean, this chance to work with this team for this year and next year and however long is his best shot to prove that he can be the next big, next offensive guy in this league. And if it doesn't work, there's a good chance he won't get another shot to do that job somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to get, you know,
the third time.
I mean, you know, North Turner – is doing it, but North Turner, you know, won a bunch of Super Bowls to start and then failed as a head coach but you know, became pretty clear he could run an offense at least.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you don't really get to be fired a couple times doing this. So,
no.
But he's well regarded, and you're right. I mean, say what we want about Andy Dalton. I mean, Ken Zampezi is the first guy Andy's been around that didn't get paid.
Correct.
You know, but he still got a job. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, his tutelage of Andy from 11 to 15 was enough for Hugh to give him a job. So, you're right. This is Joe Mixon's the real deal. Gio Bernard's the eighth highest paid running back in the league. AJ Green, you know, we know. So, you're right. It'll be interesting to see. And again, that's another thing we won't really be able to tell, Paul, I don't think, until the first padded 11s in camp, because like this is all shell stuff and like it's just patterns. It's 3-on-3s or 5-on-7s, and you know, linemen are moving, but they're not moving at full speed. So it's really hard to see.
Yeah.
At least on our level on the ground. Maybe go up on the bridge.
You gotta
maybe
go,
bridge guy knows.
We should have him on. I would have him on in a heartbeat.
Well, that guy who was up on the bridge on Tuesday, I would listen to his commentary.
Yes.
Like, he had a unique voice and manner
that
I would listen to Bridge Guy doing Bengals commentary of practice.
Hey, he was supportive of Andy.
That was a change.
Unlike past Bridge guys, almost unanimously are not supportive of Andy. Right. So shout out to that Bridge guy for being Mr. Positivity.
Yeah. More good people on the bridge. Holler at us next Tuesday, the 29th.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, again, great story.
Thank you.
Please go read that on Cincinnati.com, and you'll learn a lot more about what this offense could be and who Bill Lazor is. Because a lot of people, even though he took over last year, it got sort of clouded by the whole Zampezi this season's a shitstorm situation.
And then. The oddball joint press conference to reintroduce Marvin.
Yeah, that was really unfortunate for Bill.
Yeah. I mean, some insight, I guess some, like, you know, we tell you how we do these stories. I had a line in my lead originally about Betty Lou from Gold Star.
Yeah.
And it was sort of agreed upon by Paul and the editors that, you know, Betty Lou, while it's hilarious, and maybe you as a BBP listener know who Betty Lou is, asking her question from Gold Star during Marvin's press
reintro. Newport Gold Star.
Yeah. Maybe the wider audience would not know who that was, so that was taken out.
However, if you were at that press conference, Bill Lazor had to sit there while questions were fired, literally fired at Marvin from people like Ben Lou from the Newport Gold Star who wanted to know about discipline.
Right. And aggression.
And aggression. Why don't you freak out in the sidelines?
Right. He did. But Lazor kind of got lost in all of, I mean, and I guess partially deservedly so. But, you know, I mean, the bar's really low. You can't be worse than last.
You can't.
I mean, like,
that
it's,
is,
it's
there's no doubt about it. Factual statements here on the BBP. You will never
be worse than last.
You'll never be worse than last.
No. So, I mean, you know. It's got to be better.
Or the same.
Well, yeah.
Could still be the same.
Yeah, it's
but it can't
be
worse.
No, it can't be worse.
Okay. I want to take a quick break. It's a good chance for us to talk about 50 West because I'm excited. I'm excited. It's coming July 7th at 50 West at the Pro Works. Punch Out! Punch Out is back. Brewers, fighting Brewers. I mean, just amateur.
Bernie Brewer?
Bernie the Brewer will slide down into the ring.
That'd be great.
And fight someone from Mad Tree, I think, is what will happen.
That'd be amazing.
It would be amazing. Anybody named Brewer. So, Jim
Brewer?
Jim Brewer will fight Corey Brewer. And then Bernie the Brewer will slide down as well. Send us all your favorite brewers. Power rank brewers. That could be a future one.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do that the week of the
a good one.
The week of the punch out. Anyway, it's one of those where everybody from local beer around here is there. They've got all their beers. Usually they bring some unique stuff that they are making at the time. Sets up tents and it's just a party. Lots of good food. They will release their Punch You in the IPA, which is coming out in cans. I keep trying to convince Optimistic Bobby to fight again. He says he's not going to. He wants to retire with his 1-0 record. But anyway, come down to 50 West for that event. It's going to be a great time. Or just go down anytime because they still have tons of great local beers on tap at the Pro Works or across the street. You know, you can't beat it right now. This time of year, it's perfect. Sand volleyball leagues are going on. They still got running groups, which I don't do. And,
yeah, go down there, buy Lindsay Patterson
groups,
a beer.
Which I don't do, and then they canoeing, which I don't do. But
can
lots
do it.
Of people do, and you can.
And you can do it.
I just don't.
Yeah.
It's a problem with me, not with them. anyway, so shout out to them, as always. And we will get Optimistic Bobby back on the show before long. But we need to have something kind of good and relevant. Although he's always happy to talk to us.
He is.
We should just bring him back. Because we're going to need to start filling time soon.
Yeah.
It's about to get real dead up in here.
Yeah. You may be to that point already.
Yeah. should we leave the dramatic pause after that while we think about what to talk about next? Power rankings. Okay, so power ranking players over 35 thanks to Andrew Whitworth, because everyone is power ranking their players, the top players under 25. No. Old guys.
Yeah.
This is just going to be players that were in the league at all last year and were age 35 or older. Okay?
Yeah.
Do you have yours, Jimmy, to read?
Yeah,
you got
no,
the list?
No, I'm good, man.
Okay, you got your list. Yeah. All right. So who bottom two?
Bottom two?
Who are your bottom two who were in the league last year?
If we went to three, I'd sound like such a hater. But I want to. So this is only two. I'm just a hater. Who are we kidding? I like him, but he encapsulates all others of his position, and he's the most famous of them. So I'm going to go with Adam Vinatieri. Second bottom, like the weakest 35 plus. I mean, Adam's nice. I'm sure he's a nice guy. But there's a lot of kickers over 35. And I just think, you know, you're a kicker. So you have to be at the bottom. Well, almost.
But he's like the best of the bottom. So
yeah.
You should have picked a bad kicker.
Yeah, but he didn't. I don't know. He missed some kind of incentive by missing a kick. So, you know, he's losing it.
He's like, washed up.
Washed up.
Washed up.
It's more of a representation. But kicker, Adam Vinatieri, second from bottom. And then number one, weakest, 35 and older, but far richer than I, Josh McCown.
Oh. Josh McCown, who has been like media darling. Every coach is praising him for his mentorship. You're just not going to have
that mean
a better
you can't
guy
play?
To mentor.
Does that mean you can't play?
He played okay. He actually played okay. It could have just been because the bar was so low on him.
So I'm going to go, he's my weakest, number 35.
Okay.
35 and older.
All right, so my bottom two, I mean, you didn't even mention a punter. So I don't know that I can totally respect that.
I think punters have more to do than kickers.
But they're equally weak.
Yeah, well.
That's all I'm saying. So
as if Hubes needed any more motivation.
Oh, I know.
To treat you poorly on the golf course.
He will. I'm sure you will. Shane Leckler.
The leg.
Somebody.
I don't know if that's his name.
Look, he's 41.
Is he still in the league though?
He played last year. He played 16 games for Houston last year as a punter.
Is he in the league this year?
The leg Leckler. I don't know. That's not what we're talking about. Is he? I don't know.
We'll see.
He may be fighting for his life.
I don't know. The guys on my list are currently on a roster.
41 and a punter. You got to be towards the bottom. That's number two. Number one, similar to you, but I have a way better pick than you. M. Castle. How could you? McCown, at least, he's got some things he kind of did for a
small
amount.
Matt Castle went to a Pro Bowl.
Dude, with a hoodie. Like, hoodie just ships people to the Pro Bowl.
No, I thought Castle went to a Pro Bowl.
Kansas City?
Yeah.
Pro Bowls are stupid then, which we already know.
Unless you're trying to get in the Hall of Fame.
Dude,
then it matters. Shout out to 77 out in L.A.
Has anyone...
hey. There's no bigger fan of trying to get in a Pro Bowl...
Yeah, you're right.
...than the big fella, because at the end of the day, how many Pro Bowls you go to?
How many Pro Bowls did you go to? That's... Dude, you're talking about Hall of Fame. I had a long conversation with this. Did we talk about this at BBP? About how Pro Football Focus is going to change the Hall of Fame argument for offensive linemen?
No.
Okay. I won't go deep into it.
Yeah.
You feel like you're about to shake your head. but no, seriously.
Is this somehow going to get looped into The Bachelor?
I mean, it could.
No.
I'm not going to.
Okay, good.
Look, anybody that listens to this podcast, no, we've had Mike Renner on before.
Yeah.
He's been on here before. He's not talked about.
He's not coming on anymore. Now he's a star.
He's totally too big for us now.
Yeah.
He might actually have a contract that says you cannot go on the BBP. They're too small.
Right.
Like you.
I mean, we are more handsome than he is.
He has way better. Well, he has more hair than me.
Yeah.
Yes. In his promo photo, he wore it down like a lion's mane.
Yeah.
It was.
And I can't say that he has better hair than I do because I've never grown it out past like a half an inch.
And if you did, though, grow it to that level, I'd hope. That's the one time where it's good to have a man bun.
No.
Would you rather have it out all the way
down
like
a girl?
Oh, yeah,
no, it's got to be out.
Like Fabio style?
Oh, yeah. No man bun.
No man
bun. No man bun.
So man bun, flowing locks over.
Oh, yes.
Over man bun.
Okay.
I'm glad this is where we've ended up.
Anyway.
We were talking. Oh,
Matt Castle. Focus was, Matt Castle.
No. The point was, as they've dated back now, you know, because that is how Hall of Fames have been determined.
Yeah.
He went to 8 Pro Bowls. Like, right. Who cares? Pro Bowls were stupid. They've been voted for poorly right. for years. They're not. They don't give any sense of who the real good players right. were. PFF is the first group that has been, A, the Hall of Fame is behind, and B, all teams now,
right.
all 32 teams own PFF, or subscribe to, they are going in there and saying, no, the numbers say this. Pro Bowls don't mean jack. And Andrew Whitworth could be one of the interesting cases.
Yeah, true.
Who had great graded numbers yeah. forever, and even though he didn't have the Pro Bowls. Willie yeah. Anderson, if they went back and right. looked at him. I mean, things like that, you could go back and it could change the way it's looked at. Anyway, that was a conversation I had during one of the long times waiting for owners to come out during the owners' meetings. And it was like, anyway. Top two guys over the age of 35.
I was debating between two defensive guys, and I'm gonna go with Julius Peppers.
Yeah.
I mean that's kind of ridiculous. I mean, Suggs, I think, had better numbers, if you will, a year ago.
But he looked slower.
And he also played, you know, these guys twice.
Mm-hmm.
So Peppers is just kind of amazing that he's still doing what he's doing.
Yeah.
At this age.
I'd agree. Your number one, I assume, is...
Yeah, I'm just going to, you know...
I mean, Brady, right?
No.
What?
I'm going to...
Diss TB12?
Oh, definitely. That's what I was going to say. If I had a bottom three, he might have been number three on my list.
Oh, that would be...
But we didn't have three. It was only two.
Why are you doing this? Like, why would you choose to be the guy who's like, nah, Brady, nah.
I'm the guy who's going to go with the easy retweet. Andrew Whitworth, number 77.
Oh.
Top player after 35. Hey, seriously, I could not have a quarterback in the top three.
Why?
Of over 35. They don't get touched or hit or anything.
Yeah, because it doesn't really matter.
It's set up for them to play. You got all these quarterbacks. I'm going to play until I'm 47. Hey, more power to you. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But I definitely, in this sort of list, it's got to be a position player. And it's got to be guys who are still doing it snap to snap, which is why I put Whitworth in there. Not just pandering Big Whit for the idea of this, but he actually does play every snap. Did it at a high level. The defensive guys are all kind of specialty, Suggs, Terrence Newman, Peppers. I mean, they're not really giving it every
Tinu became specialty, I right. would say, last year. Right. He
at
was
like
still
the
playing.
Age of like 77.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's why he's my number two. Do I personally like him? Yes.
Yes.
I do. Am I biased? Absolutely. However, tougher position to play as you get into your 30s. DB or offensive line? DB, right?
Yeah.
You need young speed to play that position. Yeah. You need, I mean, there's just certain guys just don't play it that. I
no.
mean, it's really because
you
rare.
Can use your, I think even as a tackle, you know, if Witt's listening to this, he'll probably tell me no. But I think as an experienced tackle who knows what you're running, as opposed to a defender who has to react, there are things you can do to combat the, you know, the
right.
Joey Bosa speed.
Right.
As opposed to the, I was going to say John Ross speed, but no one combated that last year. So who's another fast guy?
Who was the one guy that he stopped his route against?
Yeah, the other guy.
Tennessee.
I don't know. The other guy who's another guy who's fast.
I just think DB is a tougher position
yeah.
for pure. You've got to you lose that. It's just that's the bottom line. But anyway, so I have him as my number two. Number one, I've just always loved this guy. Always. He just keeps doing it. He plays like he's 26. Cameron Wake, I just think, is just the beastliest pass rusher. I mean, Cam Wake is, I mean, he was 35 last year. I'm going to run through a few of his numbers here for you. Cam Wake, the last 2 years, has had 10.5 and 11.5 sacks, then 7 he had in 15, and 11.5 he had in 2014. That's his age, 32, 33, 34, and 35 yeah. seasons. I don't care what specialty you are.
Right.
It's ridiculous what he does. He is the most underappreciated, pure, like, great pass rusher. He never is mentioned in the conversation with guys that have these kind of numbers. Never.
He started late, too, right? Didn't he start in
He Canada? Started at age 27.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. And then by age 28, he had 14 sacks. He's had a 14 and a 15. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 double-digit sack seasons.
It's more sacks than the guy who's
and
not.
And he missed his, you know, you missed some of your prime years. So anyway, he's going to cross 100 sacks, and that means something. I love Cam Wake.
Yeah.
And he's still doing it.
So he didn't go with Brady either.
No, because I'm going by your method. I didn't want to go soft with Brady like that. You're right. That's my two dudes. All right. Why are you mad?
What's this dude's name? You're a soccer guy. Zoltan.
Oh, Zoltan.
Slayton. Zoltan. Slap flop.
I don't know that guy super well, though. I just know that he showed up in L.A. and started making all kinds
of slapping dudes and flopping. I mean, soccer players are weak.
Yeah.
AF anyway. I'll say it. I said it.
Calling him weak.
What is that? I mean, look, you guys run far and wide and far and fast. And some contact happens. But I mean that video or the GIF or GIF whatever of that dude slapping the other dude and then watching them both tumble to the ground in faux pain. And just whatever, it was amusing initially, and then I just got all mad again that that's what that sport is on a professional level.
It is
a bunch of flopping and fake injury and whatever. And this dude is supposed to be a star, and I don't know who the other guy was that he slapped, but I'm sure he was somebody.
Look,
it's weird.
The NBA does this stuff too.
They don't fake like that, man. I mean, LeBron's a faker, but he's not like,
dude, I've seen maybe not
Zoltar or whatever.
Zoltar is from Big, I think. That's the machine he plays to get big.
Yeah.
I know I see some faking in the NBA. Like, and I mean throwing your head back when you weren't touched type stuff all the time, and not to mention the whining and complaining. The whining and complaining in the NBA.
Notice I didn't say anything about whining and complaining. I just talk about
how do you
flopping.
Not, but whining and complaining,
it's not
goes
even a
hand
flop.
In hand with flopping.
See, it's that wasn't even
annoying.
A flop.
It's
though.
Equally annoying.
If you look up that sequence of events, it wasn't even a flop. It was like a slow mo. It was like a 4-year-old doing the, like, is anyone looking at me? Okay, yes. Yeah, so I'm gonna like crumble to the ground slowly and throw a tantrum.
Yeah.
Because nothing's wrong, but I just want to do this so people look at me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really had a problem with it. Maybe mad.
That's fine. You know what makes me happy is watching the media change their narratives so quickly from far one end of the spectrum to the far other end of the spectrum with every game in these series because they're all blowouts.
Oh, yeah.
So it goes from, like, the Rockets, they're going to lose in 3, right? Yeah, right? That was the thing after the Warriors blow them out in the first. And then the Rockets come back. Well, playing like this, they're going to win. And then and the same thing happens again. The Celtics, they're unstoppable. LeBron's washed up. Legacy is killed.
Yeah.
These guys are all jokes. And now it's, Stevens should be fired almost. You know, it's like, I mean, it's
there's
the
too
way,
much.
The reactive nature. And I guess this, does it sound, I don't know why this makes me happy. it makes me happy because it's been so exposed. In this particular two series in the NBA.
Yeah.
Because the reaction has been so over the top.
Why does this make me happy?
I was trying to remember why I thought this was happiness at first. Because I just like that being exposed. It's been so crazy how it goes from one side to the other and exposes the complete reactionary nature of our freaking media.
Yeah.
I mean,
we do instant analysis. Thank you for reading it after every Bengals game. It's the NBA's own fault with its like 37-day for a series.
Right.
You know, schedule. You know, what are you going to do to fill those 3-4 days of in between, you know? Michael versus LeBron conversation almost was the thing that made me mad this week.
Dude, why is that still happening constantly forever and ever and ever? It needs to go away. It doesn't make any sense.
No, it does.
They're both good, and that's okay.
I know, right?
They don't have to have a victor.
No.
They're from different generations.
Different players.
Anyway, NBA media.
But it made you happy, though.
It makes me happy that how exposed they, but I will agree. It also made me mad, clearly, too. All right. So we're out of here. We'll be back next week. And again, so as OTAs are running through here, we'll come to you. We'll try to get these things posted Tuesday overnight so you'll have them Wednesday, because these Tuesday OTAs basically push us back from our normal schedule one day. So that'll be until we'll give you one last one at the end of mini camp, which is June 12th through the 14th. So that will end the phase 3 off-season program.
Yeah.
So keep an eye out for next week, same time as it came out this week, and we'll have more on maybe Carlos Dunlap will show up. Probably not.
Yeah.
But either way, it will not be a story. It's not a big deal, and we will not treat it as such because we were told not to by the head coach. Anyway, we'll talk to you next week on the BBP. Have a good one, everybody. Thanks.